Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturellisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to episode 85 of Absolutely Intercultural, the show that brings intercultural stories right onto your ears every fortnight. We always try to find stories that carry a message, either because they demonstrate the strategies how we could make our own lives more intercultural, or how we can develop a better understanding and heightened awareness of the intercultural needs and worries of those people around us who have chosen to or who have to live between different cultures. My name is Laurent Borgmann. I'm the host of this show, and today I would like to introduce you to three people who all have their feet in two different cultures and share their experiences with us here on the show. In our first category, Absolutely Expert, we have a discussion with Jean Lennox, an expatriate from England who has lived and worked in Germany for a long time. After all these years being away from her home country, she sometimes feels under pressure when people around her still naturally expect her to know the German and the English culture equally well.
You feel under pressure a lot of the time to know things which you, when you just like to relax.
Then, in our category Absolutely African, Francis, who was born in Ghana, has the feeling that for the people around him, he will always be the African, no matter how long he has lived abroad. When it gets very hot in Japan, he is the only one who does not seem to have the right to complain about high temperatures like everybody else.
If I complain that it's too hot, and they just look at you, are you not from Africa?
And in our last category, Absolutely Bicultural, Thomas, who grew up in the Austrian and in the British cultures, tells us that when he was very young, he did not even notice that the language spoken at home was different from the one out in the street, and that he only started to appreciate the advantages of bilingualism as a teenager, when he first found out that his command of two languages could help him impress the girls.
When I was growing up, girls would be quite impressed when I could speak more than one language.
But let us start with the show. Today I would like to explore the question, why are expats always supposed to be experts? When you live in a foreign country for a while, people expect you to know the new language. But at the same time, they expect you to keep your native language on a very high level too. Apparently, the same is true for cultures. When you have lived in a country for a couple of years, people expect you to know about politics, the everyday life, or television shows in that new country. However, they also assume that you keep in touch with your native culture and know what is going on there. Now, how can this work? Is it fair to expect these migrants to master two languages on a very high level and even be knowledgeable in two different cultures? Well, fair or unfair, we simply seem to expect these people to speak two languages and know a lot about our culture without ever losing touch with their own culture, because we will always address them as experts on their home countries. Now, 3 weeks ago, on the train, I helped someone with the luggage, and when he thanked me, I noticed that he spoke very good German, but with a noticeable French accent. I immediately asked him where he was from. Vous êtes d'où? De quelle région? Ah bon, ça fait longtemps que vous êtes ici? It turned out that he had moved to Germany for his work 22 years ago, and yet our conversations for the next 10 minutes revolved around the north of France, where he came from. Although we had a nice conversation and he seemed happy to talk to somebody who knows his hometown, Lille, after the conversation, I felt bad about this. I thought that I should have asked him about what he had done in Germany during the last 20 years, rather than picking out one little detail, his accent, and then reducing him to his Frenchness. However, I guess this happens all the time to expatriates, or expats for short, people who live abroad, especially when they look foreign, for example, if they have a different skin color. I decided to discuss this phenomenon with a lecturer at our university, Jean Lennox, who has lived in Germany for a long time, probably speaks better German than I do, but is originally from England. By coincidence, I also found out that she sometimes listens to Al Jazeera English radio station because they explain British politics looked at from the outside, which is easier to understand when you do not live in the country yourself. Now, in our category, Absolutely Expert, I asked her whether our expectations that she should be knowledgeable about topics discussed in Germany, but also in her original home country, put her under any pressure at all when she talks to friends in Germany or when she returns to her hometown in England.
I'm from Manchester and I'm always thought of as a football expert, and I don't know much about football, and I know that there's Manchester United and there's Manchester City, and that's all really. I don't know who plays for them. I do sometimes, but I always forget.
Are people very disappointed when they hear that?
Well, I'm a bit of a coward because I always pretend that I know what they're talking about.
So do you think that this is the distance that makes you into an expert on these things?
I've often wondered about it because I don't go around asking people about their politics or things, because I don't assume that every Argentinian or every Frenchman or every German or Canadian know about their politics. So I don't ask them really. Mm-hmm. But I'm always thought of as an expert on everything. The strangest thing that happened to me recently anyway was this show, Britain's Got Talent, but I have no idea. I've no idea who the judges are or anything. Mm-hmm. And once then I was sent this video on Facebook by a friend in America saying, is everybody crazy about Susan Boyle in England? Well, I don't live in England, so I don't know.
But I had no idea who Susan Boyle was.
Yeah, no, then watched her on Facebook. And
oh, she is the lady who sings wonderfully like an opera star.
She's got a nice voice. Yeah.
I think I saw something on the news about her, actually.
I've just come back from Britain, so now I know all about Susan Boyle.
So you would say anybody who lives in England could not have escaped it?
Yeah. Apparently, though, everybody the world over knows this story, but I didn't because I wasn't really interested in this show. And yeah, I just found out about it through Facebook.
Is that a little daunting? I just realized that when you said expert, it sounded so much like expat. And is it a little daunting for expats that they are actually expected to have two cultures fully at their fingertips? Because, I mean, everybody would expect you to know as much about German politics and culture as other Germans, and yet they expect you to have another culture in the back of your head as well.
Yes, I think it is rather complicated, rather difficult sometimes. I'm not actually really all that political. I'm not really very politically. Right. I'm very interested in international politics, but not in national politics. Although I am growing more interested at the moment with what's happening at the moment. I think it's time for even me to get interested.
All right. Well, do you think it's a little unfair that the expatriates or people who are living abroad are expected, well, first of all, to have two languages at their fingertips?
Yes.
And then at the same time to be actually kept au courant with everything that is happening in their home countries. Because if you say things like, well, I don't really know what goes on in politics in Britain, I think people would probably think that you are a little stupid or not serious or something.
Yes, it is a bit of a problem. You feel under pressure a lot of the time to know things when you just like to relax, really.
Right. Do you sometimes do homework and catch up with things?
I do, yes, I do. That's why I listen to the BBC a lot.
Ah, right.
And I actually note things down and prepare sometimes. If I know I'm going to be in a situation like this, I will actually make notes on politics. And I did the same when I went to Britain. I thought I better catch up on really a bit more about Germany. Mm-hmm. But nobody was really interested in Germany, so except the weather and the beer and things, so it wasn't really all that important.
When you listen to Al Jazeera, what are you interested in? Why do you do this?
Well, Al Jazeera does what I found very good, British politics. There's a programme, I can't tell you the name at the moment, but they will give you the day in Parliament, practically. Mm-hmm. They are good. They've got good reporters, and they seem pretty neutral to me, and I just like it. I find them very easy to understand, Al Jazeera.
Right, because they look at it from the outside and try to explain it to people who don't live in Britain.
I think that I'd never actually thought of that. You've just put your finger on it, I think. They are looking at it from the outside, just as I am.
Mm.
They've got native speakers. They are native English speakers, but they are explaining it to an international audience.
Yes.
To an intelligent international audience, not dumbing it down but explaining it well. Yeah. Yes.
It's a little bit, maybe this is what I appreciate on BBC sometimes, yes. BBC World Service in particular,
yes.
that they will say, this happened in Manchester, mm-hmm. A city in the north of England, yes. for example, yes. which doesn't make so much sense to you and me, but it certainly does when you look at it from India or from, yes. from Africa.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's what I like about them as well. They will introduce people properly and say who they are. And yes, it's very clear because I don't know the names of all the politicians, the British politicians. Mm-hmm. I'm more likely to know the German politicians' names. And because I don't watch TV very much apart from Al Jazeera, I don't really know people's faces. So I could mm-hmm. tell you Gordon Brown's voice, yeah. I would recognize. Well, Gordon Brown, of course, I would yes. recognize. But a lot of people I would only recognize by voice okay. and not by okay. sight. It's okay. also very interesting.
I noticed that when I was watching German television and CNN, when the Iraq war was on, mm-hmm. I really got a different story. And it wasn't accidental, but you after a while you noticed that it was reported on very differently in Germany and in the USA. Do you get a similar effect when you listen to the European news on Al Jazeera? Or would you say they're not biased?
I would say they're not very biased. Mm. Maybe I'm very naive, but I find them pretty not biased. They usually have two experts from different fields discussing something or from different parties. And I find it pretty easy to understand and pretty unbiased. Mm. I may be completely wrong. Maybe I'm missing something. Mm. I don't know. I should watch more carefully in future.
Well, after the interview, I checked out the homepage of Al Jazeera English, and I must say, I immediately found videos and articles which I wanted to follow up. So maybe this is good advice for our listeners too. You will find the link on our blog at absolutely-intercultural.com. Just like Jean turns into an expert on Germany when she's back home in Manchester, and into an expert on England when she's in Germany, many people notice that when they are far from home, they are expected to be able to talk intelligently about politics, geography, and everyday life back in their home countries. Or in some cases, even about the whole continents they come from. I remember a girl in Hong Kong years ago who asked me questions about Portugal because she was planning to go there for her studies. Now, I could see on her face that I was leaving a very bad impression on her because she could not understand how a university lecturer would not be able to answer questions about a country which for her must have seemed like just round the corner from Germany because it is also in Europe. This also happened to Francis, who is from Ghana in Africa. He left his country and went to live and work in Japan. At this distance, everybody suddenly expected him to know things about the whole continent of Africa, not just about Ghana. In our category Absolutely African, I asked him what it felt like when the Japanese saw him as a spokesman for the whole African continent.
In Japan, people think, at least Japanese people, they feel like Africa is a country, it's not a continent. They have no idea, at least the majority of them have no idea that there is a different, cultures. And even within the country, we have different tribes with different cultures, with different languages. So it's like I always try to explain to people that Africa is a continent with different people. So on my way coming here, I wasn't expert that Germans are this, unless I experienced that by myself.
Now, does that happen to you that you are called in as an expert for the whole of Africa only because you come from one particular African country?
Yeah, that's, I think that's how people perceive that if you are coming from Africa, then you have to know what is going on in let's say Togo, like irrespective of your identity. You have to know what is going on in every part of the country. And plus, sometimes I don't blame a lot of people. I think it's more about media. The way media portraying some individuals makes people feel that, they are the same or they have things in common. But the problem where I disagree with a lot of people is when they perceive as a continent, then they think Africans doing things in common, like we have a common food, or we have a common culture or a common language, which is not the case. If they expect me to tell them maybe something about the continent itself, I can maybe briefly say something about South Africa, about Kenya. Of course, not details, but at least I can say something, but maybe not much. But what always I don't understand is they making it more general that Africans are Africans. We are all the same people, which if you want to categorize the people, you can see the really black Africans like me. If you go to the South, you can somehow go more close to the Pacific. And if you go to East, they are also more to Arabs. And the North, they are more somehow towards Europe. So it's a really diverse society. It's not much, we are, everything is common as people perceive it to be. Usually they take it as anything coming from West is the best place to live. So whether Europe or North America or anywhere, or not like the
kind of Western lifestyle,
or advanced, okay.
Independent of where it is, yeah, in the north, in the west, yeah, or in the east.
Yeah, that's it. And even in the east, like Japan or Korea, if they can find their greener pastures, they'll prefer to go. But of course, the most common or the closest destination is Europe, whether to use by sea or by land or by plane, the closest is Europe. So you can see a lot of people shifting from the south to north northwest.
Maybe we need to be careful as well, because one of my students said she has an Egyptian background, but she was actually born in Germany. And she said sometimes it happens to her, she goes out with other students and she says, oh gosh, it's so hot today, because it's a hot day. And then invariably one of the others will say, but aren't you used to that? You are from Egypt. And she says, I don't even know Egypt very well.
That is something I find it. Sometimes I always have to, you know, control myself, because I returned back home 2005. And when I returned home, it was so difficult for me, because it was like in the summer, maybe somewhere April. And it was so hot. And for me, even before travel to overseas, I was having problems with heat. And when I went to Japan for 5 years, you can see the differences. Biologically, a lot of things changed. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't comfortable when I went back home. And it was so difficult for me. Mm-hmm. Just like a Westerner visit home, it was so difficult for me. And if you complain, even in Japan, because in Japan, summer is very, very hotter than here. It's even hotter than my country.
Mm-hmm.
That is the point. If I complain that it's too hot, and they just look at you, are you not from Africa? So what? In my country, the highest temperature on average is 28, and right. In Japan you can find even 40.
Yeah.
In the summer on average.
Okay, so I can see that problem, that nobody believes you that you could be hot when it's 30 degrees.
Yeah, so I have every right to complain that it's hot, because it's 40.
Of course, Francis should have the right to complain about the temperatures in Japan if it gets 10 degrees hotter than in his home country. But he will probably always get this reaction from the Japanese and the Europeans, and eventually just try to avoid saying things like this, even if they are true. So let us turn to more temperate climates. In our final category, absolutely bicultural, we listen to Thomas Brown, one person who has actually managed to stand up to the international expectations and adopted not only two cultures, but also two native languages, at least when he was a little boy. Although his main language up until the age of 5 was German, and he spoke German with his mother, brother, and sisters, he does not remember what it felt like to switch between the languages. However, he had to, because his father does not even speak German. So, jetzt reden wir Deutsch. We went to the typical Austrian Stube in this English house, very gemütlich, with wooden furniture, an Austrian oven, and handmade wall decorations. And I asked Thomas how this all came about, and how much of his linguistic and cultural development he still remembers.
My mother is Austrian and my father's English, and when they met, she moved to England to marry him, and then I've been growing up here all my life.
So what was the day-to-day situation? Did you learn both languages, or did you go to German school, or...?
Well, I've never lived in Austria or Germany. I never went to a German school, but my father was a pilot, and I was the firstborn, and my mother spoke to me in German. So German was actually my first language. That's the first thing I learned. And when my sister was born, who is a year and a half younger than me, we actually used to speak to each other in German. And that only changed when I went to school, which was when I was five. And then gradually English took over as my dominant language.
Can you still remember that, that you discovered that the world outside actually speaks a different language from what you speak at home?
I don't remember that at all. And actually, my brother and my two sisters and I never speak German to each other. I don't know why, but that was the way things always were. We'd speak to our mother reluctantly, individually, one-on-one, but when we spoke to each other, in living memory, it was always English. And when we went to Austria to see my cousin, for example, the three, brother, me, and my cousin Johannes would sit around and talk, and Peter and I, my brother and I, would always speak to each other in English and then have to translate what we said to Johannes. And clearly that's a very stupid way of doing things, but the whole we must speak English to each other for some reason had by then become so ingrained that that's how we did things. So I don't remember learning that I was in England and that I had to speak English. And okay. I don't remember any.
But how did it work at home? Did you speak German with your mother and English with your father?
When I was very young, that probably was how it worked, but I don't remember that, of course. In my living memory, I spoke English to both parents as much as I possibly could. And my mother would always speak to me in German, which, by the way, my father doesn't understand. And I would always reply in English. So my father would always speak in English. And my mother would sometimes say, "Jetzt red mal Deutsch." And then I'd be forced to, but generally I'd try and speak English as much as possible.
Right.
It was only when I went to boarding school and I'd come back, and also sometimes when I was growing up, girls would be quite impressed when I could speak more than one language. So then once I realised that it was actually a good thing and maybe potentially it'd be useful when I grew up, then I started actually trying to speak more German. So then I would actually be willing to speak to my mother in German. I'd sometimes initiate a conversation in German, even if she said something to me in English. And only when she'd start to try and correct my grammar, which is terrible, would I then wish I hadn't started trying to speak German.
Did you ever mix the languages? Did you make sentences which started in English and then finished in German?
Well, despite everything I've said about trying to only speak English to my siblings, there are German words that don't translate well into English, and so we have complete English conversations interspersed with the occasional German word. Where speaking to my mother, we'd meander from conversation into German. All the German that I learnt was pretty much when I was quite young. It was maybe a 10-year-old's German vocabulary. So if I need to talk about work or, you know, how awful the government is or, you know, whatever I want to have a whine about that I wouldn't have spoken about to as a child, I'd have to revert to English. But then the rest of the time it would go back into German.
Apart from the language, was this other culture in your home as well? Did other people, neighbours and people who came into your house, did they know your mother was Austrian from the culture within the house maybe?
Well, I guess so. I mean, it was very obvious, by the way, she said three instead of three, that she was Austrian. But the things that my friends, when we were young, would notice was the food was different. My mother held on to Austrian cooking for a very long time. Then our house is actually quite Austrian. There's a lot of wood. We have a Stube instead of a living room. So that's very different. But then the other thing that's very different, which is, I wouldn't say uniquely Austrian or German, but is much more European than in England, is the importance of the family unit. There are six of us in the family, so that does give it a bit of critical mass. But a lot of my friends really noticed that, you know, I went on holiday with my family till I was much older than a lot of the others. And we did a lot of things together, and we had a lot of quality time, and we always ate together. So there were a lot of differences. And I've got a good Italian friend, and his family, I feel, is quite similar to mine in the importance of the family unit, whereas a lot of my English friends, less so.
This brings us to the end of the show. We've heard from Jean about how everybody expects her to be an expert on Germany and on England. Yes, sometimes even on football, because she's originally from Manchester. Francis told us that because he was born in Ghana, the Japanese see him as an expert of the whole African continent. And Thomas told us what he remembers about growing up in a bilingual and bicultural household in England. If you have any comments or want to contribute to the show, please let us know by writing a comment or sending us an audio file or just give us feedback on our show. Please feel free to visit our blog at absolutely-intercultural.com. We are grateful for every response, be it criticism or support for our show. Or maybe you have a suggestion as to which intercultural topics Anne and I should bring up in one of our next shows. Please don't be shy, just tell us. Our next show will be coming to you from Anne Fox in Denmark on the 26th of June. Until then, bleiben Sie absolut interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.